And most of y'all that have been here know Bill Koenig, and he is a White House correspondent. Although I don't think Obama, you know, did he ever call on you, you know, or...
I never put my hand up.
He never put his hand up because he knew they would never call on him at one of those press conferences, you know, because these people have everything prearranged. They're kind of like God, but, you know, he's got everything prearranged, but nevertheless, so Bill's going to come and talk about, normally we have him on Tuesday night, and he got here, and because David Hawking, unfortunately, has a really bad cold, he sounded really bad when he called me and said he couldn't come, so we're going to have Bill come in and talk about current events. Now, we started current events the second year of the pre-trib conference. Hal Lindsey had come and spoken on a Tuesday night, and he delivered a paper, and then during the question and answer, everybody started asking him about current events. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? And so ever since that second Tuesday night, we've had a time of current events. And I personally believe that even though prophecy, by and large, is not being fulfilled today, I know some people disagree with that, but, you know, we're seeing the stage clearly being set. And because our view is future and historical, in other words, it's going to actually happen in history, then you can see where the world is moving toward the scenario that the Bible paints in relation to these things. So, you know, I believe in speculating and all of this kind of stuff, but you need to make sure that you know you're speculating and not, you know, talking about this. But he's going to mainly analyze, since he has, you know, hangs out in the inside the Beltway crowd. You know, are you part of the swamp they're going to be draining?
No, that's why I've been out of town.
That's why you've been out of town, yeah. As someone said, when you drain the swamp, all you have left are alligators and snakes. But nevertheless, and so he's going to come and talk about what the Bible calls the last Trump.
The last Trump, wouldn't that be something? Tommy, thank you. Always a treat to be with you all. And I'll go through a couple slides here, and then I'll do kind of an overview of what I'm watching closely in Israel, the Middle East, and then get into the political and give you some insight on what's taking place up there in Washington. A lot of cabinet's great. A lot of good things are happening, but boy, we have an unpredictable president, so we're in for quite a ride. So he definitely was... what's that? Oh, gosh, no comparison. And God's favor. We saw God's favor, and what happened is we saw answered prayer. This was a prayer effort, and thank you for that, Lord. Most of y'all are familiar with our website, watch.org, and we post news every day of the year. World news is biblically relevant. And I put out a news report every Friday. There's some subscribers here. Thank you for your kind comments. And it's the weekly summary of what happened that week that was biblically relevant. And it's getting, as you all know, real difficult to summarize in 15 pages. But we're doing it, and also through the help of our website. But this is going to be a lot of fun with this new administration. I kind of stayed under the radar during Obama's 8 years, following the Holy Spirit's lead, and just said, hey, what purpose is it? So I am hopeful that Laura Ingraham will become the White House Press Secretary, which would be great. That's kind of what it's looking like right now. And it could get real active in there. So if you all are bored one day, turn on the White House. Go to C-SPAN or go to whitehouse.gov. The press briefings are usually about midday, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock Eastern. And it's going to be real intense in there. So, but I'm looking forward to the change. Ome Jerry is a prophecy in play. We've crossed the tipping point. And I'll talk about how we're kind of in two worlds right now. Everything is just continuing in the Middle East to move prophetically, and then we have the possibility of a great awakening here in America and maybe better days, but I'll try to hit on that shortly. Unprecedented record-setting events all over the world. All major areas of prophecy are in play. And this also helps people know what to pray about and how to prepare. And it will certainly be interesting. Understatement. My book, Eye to Eye, don't have any copies here, but we're updating that right now. Hopefully, I'll have that out by February of everything that happened during Obama's time in office. That's about 35 or 40 events, so we'll have an updated version. Also, we're going to update Chapter 2 on replacement theology and show you what the mainstream churches have done with Israel in the last 12 to 24 months. That's the Vatican, the World Council churches, National Council churches, the Methodists, the Lutherans, the Presbyterians. They're pushing hard and harder on applying pressure on the future, well, this president and the future president. We've had $90 billion events since the Madrid Peace Conference in October of 1991 now. Quick note here, the greater the pressure on Israel to respond, the greater the corresponding catastrophes. When God's land is touched or negotiated, or when there's pressure associated with it, you can feel the fire and the fury of whether it's atmospheric or political, of the God of Israel. When His covenant land, when they're talking about making His biblical covenant land, Judean Samaria, an Arab state, or East Jerusalem as a capital. And again, the greater the pressure, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. This is interesting, and I'll just throw this one out just as I'm going through this. Hurricane Matthew happened a couple weeks ago, and here's the chronology of what happens, and as also the title, Matthew, is very interesting. But Shimon Peres had a major stroke on the 23rd anniversary of the Oslo Peace Agreement. He's obviously the father of the Oslo peace process, and he died on 9/28. The day that he died, Matthew became a tropical storm, and Obama proclaimed flags of the United States to be flown at half-staff for Perez, which is so unusual. It just doesn't happen. At the funeral, Obama called for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. He was very specific about that. And then the White House changed Obama's speech transcript that listed Jerusalem and Israel. We received the president's speeches, the transcripts, before they're given. But what happened later in that day, they go, oh my gosh, we have made a mistake. We have put Jerusalem, Israel. So what they did, this is the way it came out. White House correction, Friday, September 30th at 4:37 in the afternoon, a line was drawn through Israel. It wasn't just taken off. It was a line was drawn through Israel and sent to news correspondents all over the world that this White House does not acknowledge Jerusalem, Israel. It acknowledges Jerusalem, a world city. Very significant. Hurricane Matthew gained strength. Path pointed at the United States. What's interesting about Matthew, as you all know, the Gospel of Matthew is written for the Jewish people. The lineage from Abraham to Jesus is in the beginning of Matthew. It was very unusual, not unusual, but it just very enlightening that that would happen. Hurricane, because you look at some of these storms, the name matches what is taking place. And the whole time of Shimon Peres, especially the latter part of his life, was talking about the land of Israel. This was his obsession, a peace deal for Judea, Samaria, and East Jerusalem to be part of it. And it's basically Abrahamic covenant had no relevance. Giving up God's covenant land, no problem. So all of this kind of was pretty interesting how it took place. White House Press Secretary strongly rebuked Israel's plan to build new homes in Shiloh. on 10-5, and then Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina experienced the brunt of Hurricane Matthew, $10 billion damage estimate. As usual, there's people that unfortunately were in the path of these storms. It's a mystery why these happen the way they do, but as I said, over 90 times since the Madrid conference, perfect storm was the beginning. Since then, it happened when the United States leaders have attempted to divide or pressure Israel to divide the covenant land of Israel. This is my new book. I put this out in June. Excuse me. And it is revealed Obama's legacy. And the purpose of the book is to fully show people what has taken place during the last 7.5-plus years of Obama's administration. I have a couple members in my family, my mother, my brother, who are Democrats. My mother used to be president of the Democratic Women of Arizona, but she is a very conservative Democrat. And, you know, and she's reading my book. And, I mean, there's things in this book, and my mother's well-read and well-informed. She had no idea that these things were taking place. No idea that these things were happening. And my brother, I don't know when he's going to read it. He has a tendency to not want to know certain things about his political party. But nonetheless, this is the purpose of this book, is to get it to people, to get to people that have supported Obama and even other Christians that have not voted in elections, to encourage them to vote in future elections, because the damage that can be done by a president such as Obama has done to our country for the last 7.5 years. My chapters are Who Influenced and Radicalized Obama? Saul Alinsky, Franklin Marshall Davis, Valerie Jarrett's family, quite a history there. Reverend Wright, Muslim Apologist, Chapter 2. He shows no emotion about what is happening to Christians in Israel, in the Middle East, especially the Middle East. Shows no emotion about the plight, but he shows great emotion about bringing refugees in from the Middle East and Northern Africa into the United States. But I go in, one, it's very comprehensive. It's about those people that have influenced him, those Muslim Brotherhood people that have worked their way into key positions within the administration, his Palestinian friends that he had before he became president, and it just flat tells it like it is. Israel's existence is in danger in Middle East chaos because of what he did in Iraq, what he's doing in Afghanistan, ISIS JV team, and the Iranian nuke deal. But again, these things happen because God has used all our presidents. I mean, this isn't just about Obama. This God has used, you know, Harry Truman, Lyndon Johnson at a key time, George Bush to begin the final day peace process, Bill Clinton to continue it, George W. Bush to start his acceleration of conflicts in the Middle East, especially Iraq and Afghanistan, have accelerated us toward final day events, and then Obama, some of the decisions he made, has further accelerated us into a dangerous time in the Middle East and also a very serious time for Israel. I'll make one note here on this. The interesting thing, I have a friend in the press office in Israel. We spent a lot of time in Israel. And he said, Bill, who would have ever thought that our allies right now in the Middle East would be the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, and the guys from the United Arab Emirates? It happened because the Obama administration has been moving out of the Middle East, less and less influence, less and less involvement, and those countries are nervous about a nuclear Iran. And we have high-level relations now between our military and their military because they know Israel has the guts to take care of the problem. Isn't that interesting? So, again, all for God's purpose. U.S. military cultural destruction, difficult for chaplains in the military, member Christians leaving the military, generals, high-level, well-respected generals humiliated by Obama, through different various things, a lot of specifics about what has happened to our military. But isn't it interesting? Donald Trump's selection, General Mattis, was all but fired by Obama in 2013 because he had the audacity to give him three questions about what are you going to do with Iran? If this happens, this happens, and this happens.
That was grounds to move him out.
Guess who's going to be ahead of the military now?
Yeah. General Mattis.
A true warrior and probably one of the most popular Marines ever to put on the uniform. A tremendous guy. And I'll get to that when I get into the political area. But faith, LGBT, he owns it. No one on this planet has done more to promote LGBT than Barack Obama. From the day he was being sworn in to the present, I go into all the details, all the specifics, and what he said about Christians that oppose his LGBT action. You just can't believe some of the things you read. But he's done it. Faith on his terms. I read his chapter on faith in his book, Audacity of Hope, and his faith is convoluted. He'll say he uses scriptures for his benefit. He won't talk about Romans 1:18 through 32, but then he'll talk about the Sermon on the Mount. He picks and chooses the scriptures he cares to use. The legacy, will America ever recover? I have a lot of details there. And then, so help me God, he added, so help me God, for the second second oath. Some presidents do, some presidents don't. But the Lord gave me 10 pages. I felt like the Holy Spirit gave me 10 pages of things that the president needs to do to basically repent for what he's done and even call for national repentance. It's not just Obama. It's our whole country needs to repent. You know, President Obama is an example of our country. And we all need to pray. And even us, even the believers, we all need to repent. As Chuck Missler used to say a few years ago, we are as responsible for these leaders as anybody else. Well, we don't participate. Judgment will fall on all. It will rain on the just and the unjust. And unfortunately, we've been experiencing that. You saw what happened in Houston when people didn't vote. You saw what happened in Charlotte when people didn't vote. So anyhow, that's the completion there. But I've got some books here, pre-trib special, and for those that have some interest, go back to the lead slide. I'll just leave that in place. Okay, there. I'm going to go ahead and do a summary of some of the things that I'm watching right now in Israel, and then I'll hit Middle East. But a lot of concern right now is if something's going to happen at the UN before Obama leaves office. There's been a lot of rumors to that effect. Congress is doing everything they can, both Democrats and Republicans, saying don't think about it. The Trump administration has basically told the presidency the same thing. Don't do anything right now. You're moving on. You're lame duck. Nothing should be done in any foreign affair matter right now. But Israel's still taking this very serious. A really neat note, Scott Sekulow is a friend of mine. He's a Messianic rabbi in Atlanta. And we were with Scott a couple weeks ago out in Phoenix, and he said his brother Jay is working very closely with Ambassador Dermer on keeping an eye on the UN Security Council or any other General Assembly, UN Security Council, or any movement. They are ready to strike. Here we have a Jewish believer, Jay Sekulow, working closely with Israel's ambassador to the U.S., Ron Dermer. And this is really special because also Jay has represented Israel, at the International Criminal Court. And this is such an incredible story. There's a lot of good Jewish attorneys. But to be selected by Israel to represent them at the International Criminal Court in Hague and also the UN Security Council, or keeping an eye, is great. So they're ready to, if they have to do something, they'll strike. The big thing is the settlement activity. It is always that. It's the settlements or it's the Temple Mount. So when Abbas feels like he is not being appreciated, he starts talking about Israel's desire to take over the Temple Mount, and that gets everything stirred up. But John Kerry had his message earlier in the week at the Saban Forum at Brookings Institute and just blasted Israel for not doing more. John Kerry has done more to push any kind of deal away than anybody else. Problem is, when John Kerry took office, or took the position of Secretary of State, John looked at the problem in Israel saying, well, the reason we don't have a peace deal is because I haven't been working on it for the last 20 years.
That's John Kerry. He really thought he was going to do it, and he came in like as Haaretz, which is the left-leaning paper, even called him like a bull in a china shop. You know, John's in town, and he did everything he could to try to work everything out. And it was not successful. Condoleezza Rice went to Israel 27 times in her last, George W. Bush's last 4 years. John Kerry has been to Israel over 40 times. And he said this week that he'd been on the phone with over 130 hours with Netanyahu and basically was blaming him and Israel for not making peace. The damage that John has done is, number one, he told Israel, you better make peace, if not you're going to be considered an apartheid state. Number two, if you don't make peace, you're going to have more and more terror. And number three, you need to make a peace deal. If not, you're going to have, there's going to be boycotts of goods made in the settlement communities. Well, we've had a little bit of every one of those three, but that's not exactly a smart negotiating position, but that's what he's done. according to a good friend of Jack Hibbs, Amir Sarfati, talked to him a couple weeks ago when we were at a conference up in Minneapolis, and Amir said that they are monitoring a lot of Russian and Farsi cell phone conversation up around the Israel's northern border and into Syria. This is the concern. There's Arabic speaking, but the big concern is an increased level of Russian and Farsi conversation that's taking place on the northern border of Israel. We've seen a couple incidents, and just even last night, Israel took out a facility right by Assad's home, or his palace, there in Syria. And this is pretty brash. And they did it with missiles from a jet. But they told Russia and they told Syria that they will not put up with weapons being taken to Hezbollah. They just will not put up with it. The other thing, you look at the flashpoints, which are interesting. The Golan Heights, you all probably remember back in April of this year, the U.S. and Russia were negotiating on a Syrian ceasefire deal, Assad of Syria said, we want the Golan Heights to be included in the negotiations. So what happened is Netanyahu convened a cabinet meeting on the Golan Heights with all his people and told the world that this land will be Israel's for everlasting. Everlasting. This is Israel's. No one else has a right to it. Well, within the next 48 hours, we heard from Russia and the EU and the United States and the Arab League saying, no, that's not the case. This is part of the 242 and 338 UN resolutions. That's not the case. So that has the potential of being a very significant flashpoint, as you all know, and also obviously the city of Jerusalem. So Obama's Iran nuke deal has done nothing but put a tremendous amount of money in the hands of the Iranians, and they are moving money. This is a question I'm going to ask in the press briefing at the White House, is a documentation of how much money Iran has given to Hezbollah since they have received this $100 billion plus from the international community. And that's something, and now that the sanctions have been renewed by the House, it's going to get interesting, to be quite honest. And it was interesting, General Mattis said the other day, his main interest right now in the Middle East is re-strengthening relations with allies and holding Iran accountable. That's going to be interesting because that could lead to the Jeremiah 49, the eventual Gog-Magog complex, but that will be very interesting to follow. Trump is committed to moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. It's interesting, this week a poll in Israel, 3% of the Israelis believe that Trump will do that. 3% is enough for him to do it. If it's that low, he's probably more determined than ever before. But he did, daughter Ivanka spoke at a Jewish community center in Aventura, Florida, 2 weeks before the election, and she said it's 100% chance that the embassy will move from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They're committed.
And I know Australia and New Zealand, I have some friends working with both of those countries, government people, and if the United States does it, New Zealand might come along, Australia might, Micronesia, Marshall Islands, it could happen, but that was incredibly encouraging. Also, there were some rumors a few weeks ago that Mike Huckabee is going to be the next U.S. ambassador to Israel. And I hope that happens. It was interesting because the day that news leaked by Breitbart, Steve Bannon's organization, and also Daily Mail, it came out shortly thereafter, no, it hasn't happened. And Huckabee was receiving so many congratulatory emails that he had to come out and text that he came out and said, no, that's not happened. But I know for a fact Huckabee was at Trump Tower that day for over a couple hours, and he came out with an ear-to-ear smile. So the nonverbal say, something happened. He came out and said, I was offered something, but it wasn't a good fit. But he was ear-to-ear. I mean, Mike smiles a lot. That day he was really smiling. So we are hopeful because Mike Huckabee will definitely push for the embassy to be moved to Jerusalem. And Mike Huckabee also understands the biblical significance of the land. He will not be in favor of giving Judea and Samaria and East Jerusalem up. So this could get really interesting if Huckabee's selected. And Huckabee, his daughter Sarah, has worked for Trump after Mike got out of the race. They have a lot of good favor. I was with some other, about 1,000 people, 1,000 Christian leaders at Marriott Marquis in New York in June. And Huckabee was the moderator. Ben Carson was there. Jerry Falwell Jr., Pastor Jeffers, Frank and Graham. It was a very good event. And that's where Trump said that he's going to get rid of the Johnson Amendment that intimidates pastors from speaking the truth. Trump said that he wants pastors to say whatever they feel they need to say from the pulpit and not be penalized. And he's committed to that. And so that is really good news. Also, he's committed, obviously, to the Supreme Court judges. What's interesting is, Trump's pragmatic when it comes to Israel and the Middle East. I read, his position statement right before the election. I don't think we could have written it better. I mean, it was very good. His speech that he gave to AIPAC, 18,000 members of a Jewish lobby were in Washington this year, and I was there, and his speech to AIPAC was phenomenal. And I found out it was written by his son-in-law, Jewish son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Ron Dermer. They wrote the speech. And just before the election in September, Trump met with Netanyahu and Kushner, and Dermer were there. It was a 90-minute meeting, and you could tell after that meeting they had a very, very good meeting. And Trump listens to Netanyahu. He knows and believes that Netanyahu knows the Middle East better than anybody in the Middle East. And he appreciates Netanyahu's strength and courage and pragmatism and just dealing with reality. So what's interesting is Haaretz came out this week that the Kushner family has been investing a lot of money in the settlement community area for quite a while. They are very committed to Israel's settlements in Samaria, and they have given money, which is very interesting. Trump did say he would like to see a deal made. He's a deal guy, so he would like to see a deal made. I don't know what the parameters would be, but, one day we're going to have a Daniel 9:27 covenant. Sometimes I think it'll be a covenant where actually land will not be transferred until certain things are met, and maybe at the midpoint of that 7 years when things are not met, that leads into the final day wars. But that'll be interesting, and he's even said something to the effect that he would have his son-in-law, who has a lot of experience in real estate, possibly involved in negotiations, but they will not be the normal negotiations that we have watched over and over again. This should have, when they were doing suicide bombings in Jerusalem around Israel, it should have been stopped then. So this will be really interesting, to say the least. Also, very interesting is the 50th anniversary of Israel's reuniting, or total control of Jerusalem will be next year. Very interesting. The 70th anniversary of Israel being a state will be in 2018. You know, we're moving into some very interesting dates here. A quick rundown on the rapid alignment of nations in the final day nations. Turkey and EU are at odds. This is not a good relationship. It's going nowhere. Paul can relate to that. I mean, it is getting very testy. EU is part of NATO. Turkey has had an interest in joining the European community, European Union, but it is very tense right now, and this coup has not won Erdogan any favor with European countries, and it's certainly not won any favor with the United States. What was interesting is that coup was the Iranian and Russian eavesdropper found out about the coup and warned Erdogan that it was coming. So rather than Erdogan going in and breaking it up, he let it happen. And that gave him an excuse to be able to get rid of a lot of people within the military, within education. I mean, it was the house cleaning in a lot of different areas of Turkish life. And so they've also, Erdogan and Putin have also worked out their differences. So, you know, when it looked like they were having a lot of problems, some people said, well, maybe Gog Magog will be down the road a bit. But they have worked out their differences. They're on the same page again. And they seem to be moving forward. Iran, as you all know, is the troublemaker of the neighborhood. Their plan is to control the land all the way from Iran. They're basically controlling Iraq right now. I have a friend, she's with Al Arabiya. She had two uncles that were generals in the Iraqi military before Saddam took over. They came to the United States. She was there last summer and talked to one of the leaders of the Iraqi military in a very interesting conversation, and he said, we don't call the shots here. It's Soleimani, the director of Al-Quds. That's who's in charge and calling the shots in Iran. I mean, Iranian leader that's calling the shots in Iraq. I mean, here we are using sorties and flying jets then. Who's going to benefit long-term? Iran. Look at everything the United States has done, the loss of life, the cost, the resources in Iraq and Afghanistan, and those very smart Iranians, helped by the fact that Iraq is a Shiite state, is moving into areas of great influence. Another thing, I was talking to a journalist in Washington, D.C. a while back. He's from Iraq. He's an Arab. He said, Iranians are three-dimensional players. They're chess players. And he said, everybody in the Middle East is playing checkers. And that's something to remember. I mean, we certainly have been playing checkers for the last 8 years in the Middle East. But the Iranians are very smart, very strict, very patient, and they have a plan. Claire Lopez, who a lot of you all probably have heard of Claire or know of Claire, she works with Frank Gaffney Jr., 27 years with the CIA. She knows the Middle East like nobody else. She is phenomenal. And she said it's not by chance that the Chinese, the Persians, and the Jews have survived the centuries because they're that smart. So this is what's also interesting is when the Shah was in power, the Iranians admired the Israelis. And they liked the Israelis, and the Israelis liked the Iranians. They had a good relationship. But when Khomeini took over, that changed dramatically. Let me put it this way. It hadn't changed entirely because 85% of Iranians think a lot like the West. It's the 15%, Khomeini and all them, that control commerce, they control the security, police, and everything else. They have a very significant military led by Soleimani. But the point is, if Mattis and General Flynn and new CIA director or nominee Mike Pompeo and possibility of Petraeus coming in some capacity, not Secretary of State, some capacity, those are four people that fully understand the threat that Iran is. So this is going to be very interesting. You know, Iran, right after the Iran nuke deal, Obama told Saudis, get used to having two powers in the Middle East. And the Saudis are petrified of a nuclear Iran.
because they'll be second after Israel's hit. And they know that.
So that is going to be something to watch very closely, obviously. Situation in Syria, what a disaster. Beyond anything we can even comprehend, 300,000 deaths, 6-7 million people dislocated, millions of people have left the country. Obviously, Obama's red line had no influence, no impact. Afghanistan right now, Iran is bringing people from Pakistan and Afghanistan into Syria to fight. Iran's funding them to fight in Syria. And obviously, Yemen is a battle between the Saudis, Iran, and other parties. And then Egypt. Egypt is blessed by El-Sisi. He has a good relationship with Israel. He's the one that overthrew the Muslim Brotherhood. He has been a good partner with Israel since he's taken power, which is very interesting. So we're going to continue to watch this area closely. Obviously, the European Union, I think you had a briefing on that. The European Union and Paul can relate to is, what a change. I mean, you know, the French president out, UK, president out, prime minister out. You've got the prime minister of Italy out. I mean, all these people in the White House the last couple of months. And Obama's out. And then Merkel's hanging on, and by telling everybody no full burqas, that was to help get her elected after a million Muslim immigrants came to Germany. But that obviously will be a very interesting area to watch in the days ahead. Trump is picking a lot of good, capable cabinet people, a lot of conservatives. Not perfect. I mean, anybody that's ever worked for our government, anybody that's in high-profile positions, there are going to be some things they've done or said that can be considered or construed problematic. But for the most part, Trump is hiring a lot of pragmatists, successful business people, people that are very well-respected military. I just mentioned those four. You know, we've got to be strong if ever before. And I tell you, the Chinese and the Russians are a very viable foe. And I was told about last year, 9/11, not this 9/11, but last year by a high-level intel guy that the Russians have penetrated the U.S. power grid. And so have the Chinese. But the Russians are doing it because of nefarious purposes. The Chinese are doing it to steal technology. They don't have any plans. So our people are aware of it. They're doing what they can. But we all know the God of Israel is Israel's protector and America's protector. We have been blessed that we've had no major events since 9/11. But nonetheless, this world is getting more and more challenging and more dangerous. And fortunately, the Trump administration is going to bring on some people that are extremely capable. The Secretary of State position, there's more names are being added. I think the purpose of Romney was for two reasons for Trump to even bring it up, and it hasn't been a real popular choice amongst Republicans. Number one is he's going to renegotiate some of the trade deals. Romney has experience negotiating deals. That's to his favor. Petraeus, very smart, very capable guy. John Bolton, also very capable and strong, very good. Corker, Senator Corker from Tennessee, was an early supporter of Trump. But I understand, as of yesterday, they're going to start looking at other possible Secretary of State. But that's, for the people that said why Romney is, I felt like the main reason for Romney is because of his business experience in negotiating some of these trade deals. Our trade deals are a joke. We have $500 billion a year of deficit with China. That's been going on for quite a while. $50 billion with Mexico. So what's so interesting right now is we're moving in with this new administration, the people they're putting in place, we're moving into a time when all that cozy little business as usual activity is threatened.
Just like the media, 90 to 95% of the media did everything they could. Washington Post, New York Times, USA Today, Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, every major newspaper did everything they could to stop Trump. Because he is a threat to them, and he's a threat to their party, which is the Democratic Party. But the Democratic Party under Obama is in shambles. 33 governors, Republican governors, two-thirds of the state legislature are controlled by Republicans. You know, you're going to have 240 or so Republican congressmen. You have a majority in the Senate, and you have a Republican president and a Republican vice president that are going to do a lot to use the Republican platform that was put in place at the convention as a guide for the future. And I tell you, before Phyllis Schlafly passed away just a few weeks ago at 93, she said this is the best, the Republican platform is the best, it was the best in her lifetime. They got rid of two states. They got rid of, they put in that Jerusalem is Israel's undivided capital. They did not say anything about the peace process. They talked about Israel's right to be secure. And what's interesting is this is the first Republican convention in four that was not disrupted by a major hurricane that was coming at the United States. What's interesting is the last three previous conventions, the White House was working very actively on a peace deal, and those three Republican conventions were disrupted by a hurricane. The last one was Hurricane Isaac. In 2012, when the Republican Platform Committee did not want to go two states, they wanted to keep it. They wanted to go one state. Congressman Cantor at AIPAC said, "No, you need to be in lockstep with the state of Israel. You need to include two states." They pressured the Platform Committee. They approved it by a small margin, and that's the day that Isaac began. Within a couple hours, that's the day that the Tropical Depression, which led to Isaac, which led to the cancellation of the first day of the Republican convention and completely disrupted the schedule. And it started right at the time that they were going to make that addition. So anyhow, Cleveland, it was 80 degrees, sunny, and peaceful. Trump will be interesting, to say the least, to follow going forward. He's committed. When I went to an event there in New York, and then also the Value Voter Summit, Family Research Council puts that on every year. Trump is very comfortable with Christians. It's really interesting. I mean, he likes Ben Carson a lot, Jerry Falwell Jr., Mike Huckabee. He respects Franklin Graham. He really respects Christians. I mean, they tell it like it is, and their Pastor Jeffers stuck his neck out here in Dallas for him. Obviously, there's flaws. There were flaws in both our candidates. Franklin Graham and his 50-state tour, Decision America tour, spoke of that. But a lot of the focus was on the importance of our Supreme Court. This is, look what happened. Same-sex marriage, here it is, 34 states said no to same-sex marriage. And Obama and Holder said, well, fine, we'll just do it through the courts. And they did. And two of Obama's appointees helped same-sex marriage become law on the day that the rainbow was imaged in the White House, June 26, 2015, an infamous day. But the point here is get rid of the Johnson Amendment, the Supreme Court nominees, conservative judges in the lower courts, and just cleaning house the best they can. And I tell you what, Mike Pence, as you all know, was a really good decision. And he's probably, of all the people, there's a lot of supporters of Israel on Capitol Hill, and he's one of the best. So that was a really good decision. How many times have you seen a vice president in charge of transition? Let's kind of respect it, that Trump has and Mike Pence. Also, the Heritage Foundation is responsible for most of the resumes being brought in for the first 4,100 positions. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, the Heritage Foundation is about as conservative as you can find in Washington of all the think tanks.
Their response, I talked to one of the ladies the other day, and a couple of Reagan people are overseeing this. They work for Reagan, and Heritage Foundation is responsible for this. This is really good stuff. And a lot of things that are coming out of Trump are going to be in lockstep with that platform that was passed in Cleveland. But, you know, what's interesting is you see all these, what we are considering good selections for the cabinet, and then Trump will come out and say something about the cost of Air Force One, the future air, being $4 billion. Well, Boeing says we haven't even come up with a number yet, but he made a big deal out of it. So some people are trying to take Trump's Twitter account away from him. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but nonetheless, sometimes, and then yesterday had a Japanese businessman, a SoftBank, commit to $50 billion investment in the U.S. and to create 50,000 jobs. Digress a bit. Back to the main three. Supreme Court nominees, get rid of the Johnson Amendment so pastors and Christians can tell it like it is biblically and not be threatened. And we're going to have a wall on our northern border, southern border. And obviously, the Border Patrol people supported Trump. And he says he does not want anybody illegally getting in our country. You know, this is something in 1988, Reagan and the Republicans, they passed a bill. Then it was only about a six and a half million people problem. Then now it's 15 million, maybe 20. But something has to be done. It's been runaway with Obama. And it's been runaway because they think that they can cater to those people and get those votes for future Democratic purposes. So that's going to happen for sure. The Israel situation, obviously a lot of us are concerned about that, and I think that will be a very interesting, somewhat pragmatic approach, and maybe it will lead to that final covenant. But there's going to be battles in Washington. There will be some significant battles because there is so much waste. When Obama took office, $10.6 trillion. Today, it's right near $20 trillion right now. So when you hear about our economic boom and job creation under Obama, a lot of that was funded by new federal debt, $4.5 trillion in new Federal Reserve debt, and record consumer debt. So obviously there's going to be some things that need to be done. And Trump, according to Steve Moore and Larry Kudlow, thinks he can balance the budget in 7 years. They've got a plan to do it. But there's going to be some departments that are shrunk dramatically in Washington, and possibly even some eliminated. You hear that about energy or education and other things like that. So there's going to be some tough stuff. So what's going to happen is the gatekeeper for the Democratic Party, the media, is going to get even more difficult to deal with. So we're going to have somewhat of a cultural war in Washington, D.C. And obviously the prayers of the saints is going to be very, very critical going forward. And also I heard in a couple instances when Trump went through some difficult times toward the end of his campaign, he's becoming more and more repentant and had some Christians that were there to minister to him and talk to him, which is great. He was very open to that. And also his children are assets. They were the ones that really pushed for having Mike Pence selected. Trump liked Christie because of their relationship, but the children, the two sons and the daughter, really pushed for Mike Pence to be the vice presidential nominee, which is a really good move. That by itself could have got him the election and helped, obviously, with the Christian community. I'll go through a couple more here and then maybe take some questions, Tommy. News that Laura Ingraham may become the White House press secretary. She's on about 300 stations right now, but being press secretary gives you a lot of national and international exposure. So that might be something she does like Tony Snow did for George W. Bush. She's tough. And Monica Crowley's another one that's being considered. She's very strong too. But Laura Ingraham she will take these people on. And it's I remember being there through all 8 years of Bush. Almost every briefing was an attempt to discredit or to take that president down. It will be much more on steroids with Trump. It's going to be a war zone in there. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer will be difficult to deal with. Some people that know Schumer say he's going to be more difficult than Harry Reid. But what's interesting is McConnell said yesterday they're going to go back to the simple majority in appointments, which the Democrats pulled off in 2014. So thankfully they've already done it. Well, you did it. Well, why not? Good for us. So if they go simple majority on appointments, this is going to be really good. And that's what they're going to do. The filibuster thing is a killer in the Senate. So I think that he'll be able to get most of his people, cabinet and judicial nominees, through on that simple majority. Also pray that we have no major terror event between now and inauguration, or even on the day of inauguration. You know, ISIS is threatening to do something. They threaten to do a lot of things. But we just hope and we need to pray that there will not be anything that happens between now and inauguration by a terror group or even the current administration. Don't think that's going to happen after. First of all, they never even thought that Trump was going to win. Clinton certainly didn't. Most of the people at the White House didn't. I mean, this is a total shocker. And almost all the pollsters, and most of the people in the media, even some of the people at Fox, said, there's no way Trump's going to win this. But he did. Kellyanne Conway ran a beautiful election. She deserves a lot of credit. She's one of America's top pollsters. And when Trump and them were going up to Pennsylvania and Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota, they go, they are crazy. What are they doing up there? They'll never get those states. But Conway knew there was areas up there, high unemployment, a middle class in those areas that had been hammered the last 8 years, and then they played it masterfully. And that's why they were successful. One last thing here is one of the most interesting relationships to watch will be Trump and Putin's relationship, to say the least. And that could have very significant, prophetic significance. That by itself. Some people right now with the leadership change in the EU believe that Putin's going to start making his move on doing more to deal with that sore situation for him. And Trump is going to commit to NATO. I think he wants NATO members. NATO is very important. And I think he's going to make sure that the member nations pay their share. Just like at the UN, pay your share. And I think there won't be any disruption. NATO is obviously very important. So that's going to be really interesting to watch. So only God knows how that relationship between Trump and Putin will go about. But then again, as I mentioned earlier, all of our presidents, way back when, even Roosevelt and Truman and all the way to the present, all play a significant final day role. Everything is coming up to that final day through the leadership of our American presidents, the most important political figures in the world. So that's why, when you get annoyed sometimes with what these guys are doing, and there's a lot of reason to be annoyed, understand that God's sovereign. He's still in control, and we are living the most exciting time in history, very possible the time when we see our Messiah return to Jerusalem for his thousand-year millennial reign. So, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Questions?
I have a question. Has Trump said anything ever about the Convention of States?
No, he hasn't, that I'm aware of. I don't think that's going to happen. As far as a constitutional convention type thing, I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not aware of it.
Even with so many states becoming Republican legislators?
Yeah, I think we're safe there. Any kind of major constitutional change requires, I think it's 2/3 of Congress to approve it, and then the states, is it 2/3 or 3/4? 2/3 of states also. So I don't know, David, if something's going to happen or not, but he has it right now. He's going to have a lot of other challenges ahead of him. It might get to it at some point, but it happened recently.
Bill, over on this side, right over here in front. What do you see happening over at the State Department? Any changes in the State Department in your view of things?
You know, the big challenge in the State Department is they're lifers. A lot of the people in the State Department are Arabists. And, you know, the State Department, it will be really interesting to see who he selects. I mean, Powell was kind of went along with the status quo, so he was relatively pretty decent. I mean, put it this way, he was a Secretary of State that they liked because he didn't ruffle feathers. But when you get somebody go in there and really change things, it needs to be done, as you know. There is, to be quite honest, sometimes I go to the press briefings at the State Department, but that LGBT spirit is so thick in there, I can't even really go. It's just changed dramatically under Clinton being Secretary of State and Kerry. There needs to be a major house cleaning in the State Department. But as you know, for many, many years, the big problem has been the lifetime Arabists that are in there until they retire. And the other thing is they have cut some bad the deal. The lady that did the North Korean nuke deal is also the one, Wendy, I can't think of her last name, but Wendy, along with Kerry and one of the energy secretaries, are the ones that did the Iran nuke deal. They did most of the negotiations. So we need a tough negotiator. I think, again, that's why part of the reason Romney is considered, because he's been very successful. But we just need a house cleaning. And that's the problem in Washington. It's not easy to clean house. And they're going to fight and fight. You know, this is turf protection. That's going to be the greatest challenge in the next 4 years, is the war between what's there and the hope for a change for the future.
The same is true, I think, in Homeland Security. I just read yesterday that the transition team was going to remove the Muslim prayer room and take away some of the trappings, you know, that Obama's put in place. But there are so many Muslims in the White House and in Homeland Security. How is he going to handle that?
Yeah, they're, you know, I understand Congressman Mike McCaul is possible. He's up for a Homeland Security director, and he's a great guy. I hope he is. Great yeah. Friend of Israel. See, that's a great example. I mean, we have 7 or 8 Muslim Brotherhood figures that have moved into key positions within the administration. Then we have, I understand at one time, 5,000 Muslims working at the Pentagon. We have 250,000 Muslims working that live in the Washington, D.C. area, or even the area where we live in McLean and Tyson's Corner. It's just the Arabs have just flocked in there in the last 8 years. A lot of wealthy Arabs, spoiled with rich kids. But they are flocked into Washington. And you know, I don't know how they move them out, but they need to. This is a very significant threat to our country. Now, there was people with high security clearance that were Muslims. They were outed by Congressman Gohmert and others. And I don't know. The next Homeland Security guy is going to have to be tough and do that. You know, clear house where there is a potential threat. And
do you think they really understand the agenda of Islam and the way they operate to take over a country?
You know, the Pentagon does. The Pentagon was very interesting. Is, you know, Obama, when he spoke to the Muslim audience in Cairo in 2009, and then the Turkish parliament the same year, you know, talked about Thomas Jefferson, John Adams honoring the Quran to the extent that they had copies of the Quran. Well, the reason those men had copies of the Quran was to try to figure out who these Barbary pirates are and what was influencing him. You know, that's what every think tank in Washington, D.C. should have been doing the last couple of years, get familiar with the Quran. But hardly any of them do that. So the Pentagon, they know what's going on. They know they've been fighting this enemy for quite a while in the Middle East. They understand it. But here's an analogy. A couple of years ago, it was in the Washington Times. It said, this is the difference between the political parties. The Democratic Party look at the Middle East as the lack of socioeconomic opportunity. The Republican Party looks at this as the battle between good and evil. So if we have more of the Pentagon-type influence in this government, and if Petraeus is at stake, don't know if he will or not, you're going to have people at CIA, Mike Pompeo, top of the class at West Point, Harvard Law degree, head of, he's involved in the House Committee on Terror. I can't think of the exact name, but these guys know the enemy. And that's the key. So I think that's, when I look at all this, the security guys Trump is selecting, and he put some security guys at the State Department, there's hope of finally getting things back in order. But, you know, Washington's been so politically correct. And they use that to their advantage, this America's political correctness, to the point that we're vulnerable.
Why do you think that Obama has been so preferential to the Muslims? It seems like everywhere you turn, he's doing something to placate the Muslims, and he's doing less for Christians.
Well,
is there an agenda there, you think?
Well, in chapter 2 of my book, I go into great details about all the things he said about Islam. We're developing a DVD right now of his speeches to Muslim audiences. It's obvious what he has a greater interest in. People ask me a lot, is Obama Christian? I say, well, look at his speeches when at the National Prayer Breakfast, when he said, don't get on your high horse. He pointed people to the Crusades. This is right after he talked about ISIS and Islamic terror. Then he said, well, let's not get on our high horse. Look at the Crusades. Look at what happened to Jim Crow. Those are Christians in the South. He never does anything to edify Christianity and does nothing but pedestal Islam. That by itself, and the people he's associated with, says a lot.
I have a question. I read about the Democratic Party that there's one Muslim in the House of Representatives who they want to put in charge of the DNC. And the second thing is, in 2 years, from what I understand, two-thirds of the Democrats will be up for re-election. Is that correct?
Keith Ellison is the congressman from Minnesota. That they're thinking about doing it. That would really be a big mistake. But they're thinking about it. Nancy Pelosi, 77-year-old Nancy Pelosi, has just been reselected to be the head of the Democratic Party. The leadership of the Democratic Party, I think their combined age is about 200 and some years old, three people. Someone said, all the way back to 1776. Three top leaders of the Democratic Party in the late 70s. I mean, for Republicans, the Republicans in Washington say, man, we got another chance. Let's don't mess this one up. They kind of did it the first 2 years of Bush's term. 9/11 kind of helped create that problem because then it led to a massive amount of money spent in Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know about the two-thirds. Obviously all 435 get reelected every 2 years.
What it is
it's rotating.
Of
that's
the
right.
One-third that are up
third,
for election,
third.
Two-thirds of them are Democrats, whereas this last election, two-thirds were Republicans.
Huh.
So when you have two-thirds of the senators that will be up for election, then the Democrats would be vulnerable.
Yeah, that's a good point. Republicans need to get a good slate of people. What was interesting is Kelly Ayotte, who's a friend of Israel, who was defeated in New Hampshire by 700 votes. She got put in a difficult position because she mentioned Trump as a role model, and in the heat of a debate, and then kind of went back and said, no, he's not a role model. So then she kind of moved away from Trump, and unfortunately, probably cost her the election. 700 votes is all. But Trump brought her in. She's going to possibly be involved in his government. And also the guy that ran against Harry Reid did not back Trump in Nevada. So the two people that basically did not support him quietly or otherwise both were defeated. Which is pretty, what a mandate.
You think Trey Gowdy will have a spot?
Oh, yeah. Trey Gowdy, he's a very effective congressman. You know, he's a former prosecuting attorney. He's very, very...
Let him see if he's FBI director.
What's that?
I would love to see him as FBI director.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to meet with Comey's. You know, the FBI has a director has a 10-year term, so they're going to talk with. I think Comey's 3 years into it. Comey. What's interesting is Comey's been very well respected by both previous to some of these things that happened with Hillary. So they're going to talk to. They're going to talk to him after inauguration. So not sure what will happen. Maybe he'll step down.
Bill Bob Jeffress is my pastor, and early on he made the church aware of this interest that Donald Trump had in having a relationship with him. We pray for that and rejoice in what's happened. My question to you is in the area of communication, and by way I mentioned that our church began something called iCampus, and since April, 100,000 unique individuals have been on this website during church service time from 113 different countries and over 1,000 individual decisions for Christ.
Wow,
come out of that. Now, my question to you is, I feel CNN and the rest of them is like drinking from the toilet. And so I think we got two-fold attack or a plan that we ought to have. One, how can we educate believers that you don't go to CNN, you don't go to any of this garbage that's on the internet. You have connections with who's supporting what, with phone numbers, or you can call them and say, hey, I don't like the fact that ESPN, what I call expanding sexual perversion, is... You know,
here's a problem. Let me run through this real quick. Last Pew Research report in this year said that 64% of Protestants now favor same-sex marriage, 57% of Catholics, and 25% of evangelicals. Those numbers are all getting higher and higher. The other thing is 65% of our church is replacement theology. I added the numbers up in 2004, so it's 66% of the church is replacement theology. So they believe that there's no biblical significance to prophecy, allegorical, and not literal. But what's interesting is that's also about the percentage of the church that's in the social justice focus. So the replacement theology and the social justice focus, that's about the same percentage of the church. You'll never hear from those social justice, hardly ever hear from those social justice churches the consequence of sin. They'll talk about treating the symptoms and doing things to deal with the symptoms, and they do a lot of things to help people with those symptoms, but they don't talk about the root, which is sin. And that's a problem in a lot of our churches today. They're moving away from the gospel of Jesus. You don't hear Jesus mentioned in a lot of these services. I had a friend, a national a pastor a couple years ago, and he said, I'm afraid in 5 to 7 years, Jesus will not be spoken in most Jesus will not be spoken of in most churches in America. Hadn't got there yet, but the fact is, we've got a real big problem in the body in America. And also, most of the people in those replacement social justice churches do not believe that there'll be an earthly judgment. They do not know anything about a millennial reign, and they don't know about the rapture. So that's part of the problem too. And a lot of those folks get their media from the 90-95%. And unfortunately, Fox is changing a bit. The LGBT people have worked their way into positions of influence in every media organization, Fortune 500 companies, NBA, NFL, Major League Baseball. I mean, look what they did to the Governor McCrory there in North Carolina. That bill, all it said... Good example here, only 8% of the people turned out to vote. In Charlotte, they voted a pro-lesbian mayor like they did down in Houston. All that bill said was that you're to use the bathroom of your gender at birth. All-Star Game leaves Charlotte. NCAA cancels 14 conference championships there. Companies, large companies saying we're not going to expand now in North Carolina, which is a very pro-business state. Governor, one quick note here, the governor of Georgia, Governor Deal, was told by the NFL that if you don't, I'm paraphrasing here, but if you don't veto that pastor protection bill we're going to take Atlanta off the 2019 list of possible sites for the Super Bowl. This is what we're dealing with. That's probably one of our biggest threats right now is that agenda, and then also the condition of our church today in America. I don't know how the Lord's going to put everything back in order, but it will be interesting.
Could you speculate on a couple of things? One is that Obama has repeatedly said he appreciates Bush's non-interference. What do you see him doing, and how do you see him interacting? And secondly, what in the world was Al Gore doing interviewing Trump Tower?
That was humorous, to say the least. Trump believes that global warming is a hoax. He does not favor that, and so, you know, for the sake of diplomacy, he said, fine, I'll let Al Gore come in and see what he has to say about this. But he doesn't believe it, and a lot of the people that he's talking with energy, America's going to have to drill a lot more wells. They're going to get rid of a lot of regulation that's killing small, medium, and large companies. What was the first part? I'm sorry, the first part of the... Oh, yeah, yeah. To George W. Bush's credit, he's established the gold standard of how you handle a president that's been elected. And I tell you, his father, George Bush, and his father treated Obama incredibly well. They did everything they could to facilitate that transition, where Bill Clinton, his folks were taking W's off typewriters and computers, and it was not good. But
stealing from the White House.
A lot of stuff like that, Tommy. So, and Obama is committed to a smooth transition, but he's going to be in D.C. still. His daughter, I think, has 1 year, maybe 2 years left in high school. I don't think he'll be able to stay out of it. Like his father, Clinton, for the most part, and he did. So, only God knows. But as far as the Gore visit, I think it was more diplomacy than anything else. Yes.
Is there any buzz about Obama possibly being the Secretary General of the UN?
Well, there was a rumor about that 5 or 6 months ago that there was a chance, or that he had interest in being this, you know, Secretary General of the United Nations. At that time, I read it in Jerusalem Post and a few other newspapers, but he supposedly, Netanyahu and some other Middle East leaders said, we're never going to let this happen. And that was a lot of Middle East leaders. And then it just kind of went quiet. There's some kind of rotating arrangement they have. The new head of the UN is going to be from Portugal. There's some kind of rotating, I don't know if it's continent by continent. I'm not sure exactly how to do it. But that's who the next UN Secretary General is. Ban Ki-moon's term is up at the end of this month, and then the Portuguese leader will take it. I don't think that's a threat.
I heard he was going to run for Antichrist. Is that true?
How do you do that, Tommy?
Who will be doing the invocation at the inauguration?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know yet. That will be interesting. You know, Pastor Jeffers, I would imagine, he took a lot of heat, you know, a lot of heat. And also maybe Fall of Jr., you know, Ben Carson. Huckabee, I don't know, but I think definitely the Jeffers and Falwell Jr. were the ones that came out the quickest, the earliest for Trump, so that might be a possibility. Yes.
We haven't heard anything about the Justice Department and the Attorney General and some house cleaning. Doesn't there need to be a little bit of house cleaning in that department?
Oh, yes.
What about Hillary?
Yes, ma'am. I think Sessions is going to do a great job. We've got a lot of people at the Justice Department a little nervous right now. But Sessions, the main thing against Sessions, he said something 40 years ago. That's what this media works with. He said something 35 years ago. Or I think I heard Laura Ingraham say something today. You know, they're at Dartmouth right now trying to find out about my record. You know, they're that desperate. And that's a sign of desperation. So Sessions, he'll probably get through. He put Ku Klux Klan members in jail when he was down Attorney General of Alabama. I think he's going to do a good job, and I think there's going to be a house cleaning there. Obama used justice You know, when 34 states said no to marriage, he said, fine. You know, he and Holder refused to defend marriage. And then seven attorney generals got in the mix. And that leads to lawlessness when your presidents that are sworn in are sworn on oath to defend the laws of the land. And that's what we were having. Sessions will clean that out.
What?
Well,
is that a dead issue?
Well, it's, you know, Giuliani's, he's not going to be attorney general, but there's people that really think that she should serve time. The main thing is, I think the Republicans are so tired of Clinton distractions, despite that she's done wrong, and this thing has a web, it can get bigger and bigger. There could be a lot of people part of that problem. But I think Trump, he's just, they want to get on with a new government. They want to get the first 100 days out of the way. They want to move into some real constructive new things rather than having more of this Clinton stuff. People are just tired of that. So I don't know what would happen. I kind of have a feeling, I think some people are just hoping that Obama will pardon her of anything. So just to get it over with.
Utah, where I am from.
What's that?
Kelly just got announced. General Kelly, Homeland Security.
Interesting.
General Kelly.
I love it. Another general. He's very good. That's wow. General Kelly has just been selected Homeland Security.
All right.
Whew. I love it. Yeah.
Just as a point of information, Utah, where I is from, is undeniably the most conservative state in the Union.
Right.
Salt Lake City now has a lesbian mayor. Her first act was to request the resignation of all 29 department heads in the state, or in the city. I don't know where it's going.
Well, probably the voter turnout was probably in the one digits.
The most liberal part of all of Utah is Salt Lake City, believe it or not, right around the Mormon headquarters,
which happens.
Is very unusual. People can't imagine that. Now, you get outside of the Salt Lake City proper, extremely conservative, but that little nest right in the middle of the city where the University of Utah is and the Capitol, extremely liberal.
Well, thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you.